This is a Hot Pie original.
Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the DMP CD Sports Podcast. I'm Chad Fisher alongside my co-host, Tony Farmer. Tony, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing awesome today, man. I'm excited because we have our first in-person guest on
What's up, man? Yeah. I'm excited about this.
For sure.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
This is my first in-person experience as well.
Yeah.
Love it.
Oh, wow. What's up?
Love it.
We're all fucking doing some new stuff today. You want to introduce our guest?
Yeah, for sure. This is Pamela Maldonado of Odd Shark. She's a sports betting analyst. And really the reason that she's on the show today is because Chad and I appreciate tennis. We watch a little tennis. But you don't want to be taking betting advice from Chad and I.
Yeah, not at all. Not on tennis. Yeah.
No, absolutely not. And so that is Pamela's jam. She's really an expert in this area. I love watching her stuff on Twitter. Really in-depth analysis. And so we got Wimbledon coming up. And so we want to make sure that you guys get some good advice from her about Wimbledon. But like I said before, she works for Odd Shark, and I want to see if Chad wants to tell folks a little bit about Odd Shark before we get started.
Yeah, definitely. Odd Shark is a staple here on the DMP CD Sports Podcast. This is like one of our favorite sites to go to, especially when we're getting ready for a game, getting ready to put some money down. Odd Shark is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, the hottest sports news, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Odd Shark has that too, and it's absolutely free. In-depth expert analysis, odds, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. They've got decades of stats in their databases, and their insiders give you takes so hot they sizzle. They're your one-stop shop for all your odds info on sports and pop culture events.
That's right, folks. So if you want to get a better understanding of the odds, maybe the math behind the numbers, how are the lines set during the NFL season, why do lines move during the week, Odd Shark will give you the tools that you need. They're a proven industry powerhouse. They have info from around the globe, giving you the chance to access the best odds on the planet. So whether you want to check out tonight's odds, this week's odds, or we're going to talk a little Wimbledon tennis, maybe you want to look at that, maybe some future stuff for the NFL, head on over to Odd Shark and start thinking like a shark today.
Go-to resource, man. You can't, if you're going to place a bet, you got to go to Odd Shark because of all the great information they've got. I enjoy all their boxing information too, man, because we got some, it's a big summer of boxing. They've always got some good articles on there, giving you a little knowledge about some of the fights you don't know about. And then also some of the big fights that are coming up. We got Wilder and Fury coming up this summer. It's going to be awesome. Definitely check out Odd Shark and get some information on there. Find out some good prop bets and stuff too, right?
Indeed, man. Yeah. It's a great resource. We liked them before they were our sponsor of the show already. So we were already checking out that website. And Pam has some content on that website, specializing in football especially, but tennis as well. So that's why she's here. So
we had her on before to talk about some football and everything like that. And so now we get to shift gears a little bit and talk about some tennis, which is a big week for tennis this week, right?
Indeed. Yeah. We got Wimbledon. So what's on your mind with Wimbledon coming up, Pamela? Who are the folks that you got your eyes on?
This is the hardest Wimbledon draw that I have seen in years.
Wow.
It is Novak Djokovic and everyone else. You have Novak Djokovic at the top of half of the draw. His path to the final, it's pretty easy breezy. There's this kind of gif floating around of him just kind of like, a little swagger coming in. That's Novak Djokovic right now. He is the world number one, and he's coming in as a minus 120 favorite. If you follow me on Twitter, which this is a new podcast, so probably unlikely, but if you do follow me on Twitter, I grabbed a Novak Djokovic to win at plus 150 weeks ago. It was right after he beat Nadal on his surface on clay at the French Open. If you're going to beat the king of clay, then you're probably going to win that tournament, and then everything else is going to be a breeze for you. Wow. So I saw an opportunity, grabbed it at plus 150, and now he's walking into the final. The draw just was released this morning. It is easy for him. And then the bottom half of the draw, you have just like an unremarkable. This is what I envision. There's a group of people for the Wimbledon committee, and they walked in and said, we want to make it as hard as possible for everybody. And so they threw in all of the big servers at the bottom of the draw. You have for Djokovic, his is pretty simple. He has Jack Draper, who is a wild card. He potentially could see Kevin Anderson, Gael Monfils, and Andre Rublev. and that's about it. But if you look at the bottom half of the draw, it is just absolutely insane what they did to this. You have not just one or two big servers. You have literally like 10 to 12.
Oh, wow.
You have Italian Matteo Berrettini. You have Americans, John Isner, Riley Opelka, Sam Corey, Australian Nick Kyrgios, Croatian Marin Cilic. You have Leonard Struff, Alexander Zverev, Canadian Felix Auger Aliassime. And then they decided to throw into the wolf pack 8-time Wimbledon champion Roger Federer.
With
world number two Daniil Medvedev. It was like, let's get Djokovic to the final, and then everybody else fend for your own.
Yeah.
So this is the type of Wimbledon event, unlike that I've ever seen. It is absolutely
must see TV though.
It's going. I think I'm so excited for this. I was excited for Wimbledon before I saw the draw.
Yeah.
I am hella excited for Wimbledon after seeing this draw, because you know that it's Djokovic against who else?
Yeah. So drinks on Pam if Joker wins.
That's good. What is that? Closing line value for sure.
Yeah, right?
For sure. So is that plus 150? Do you know what he is right now if someone were to go on?
I grabbed it at plus 150 a couple weeks ago. Oh, it was like, 2 weeks ago. And now he has minus 120.
Wow.
So. Great closing line value.
And nice if he work. Doesn't work, I can be happy with the ticket that I'm holding. More than likely, though, it's looking like that's the path that's good.
Yeah.
The path to victory is pretty simple for him.
Stakes on Pam. What's
and
up?
Folks, this is why you need to check out Oddshark. Yeah. And this is why you need to follow Pamela on Twitter. Was this something that you tweeted out to encourage other people to do?
I did immediately. Like bam. Immediately after he defeated Rafael Nadal in the semifinal of the French Open, I said, I am grabbing him to win. And then I read an interview after the match where Nadal kind of seemed like he was a little bit tired. He was saying, I'm 35. I'm no longer 25. Uh-oh. That tells me you're probably considering that you're not going to play Wimbledon.
Oh, wow.
And then what happens?
Doesn't play.
He withdrew from Wimbledon. He withdrew from the Tokyo Olympics.
Wow.
So his line dropped from plus 150 to plus 100.
Wow.
And I said, you can still grab plus 100. And now he's minus 120.
Wow.
Nice work.
That's why you got to follow her. It's going to be on your screen right about now if it hasn't been yet. And it's Pamela M35. It's not Pam Elam.
Which is,
despite what Tony may say, it's not Pam Elam.
In infamy.
It's not Pam Elam. I almost said Pam Elam too. I was like, this jackass.
Just closed so nicely.
He got me already. Yeah. Pamela M35 on Twitter. You're giving this information out for free too. This is on your Twitter. This isn't like people got to sign up for something.
Yeah.
You know?
And so if you're sitting there and you're jealous and you're like, man, I want that closing line value. I wish I had that ticket at plus 150 because you can't find it anymore.
No.
In the future, it's your fault if you miss the boat on this, because we're telling you to follow Pam and check out Oddshark, and that's where you can get that awesome information for sure. Pamela, anybody that, when I bet tournaments like this, golf, tennis, et cetera, I like the underdogs. Everybody's different. I personally don't like to bet the favorites. Is there someone that stands out for you? You mentioned some wild cards. To me, that suggests you never know.
Yeah, you do never know. And there are a couple of players but they're all at the bottom half of the draw. So that's what I'm saying. So it's Djokovic versus who else? If Djokovic were to fall, it's because Djokovic himself. He defeated himself. We had a US Open event in 2020 where he chucked the line judge right here into the neck and he defaulted. Like a situation like that would have to happen again for him to not win. If you're looking at the bottom half of the draw, the people who can defeat Djokovic, you're talking about the big servers. This is grass court tennis. Grass court is the fastest surface in all of ATP tennis. And the players who do excel on this type of surface are the heavy, big, fast servers. The ones who can knock out aces like no big deal. The ones who can hit the tee. If they're targeting the tee, they're going to hit the tee. If they're going to hit it wide, they're going to hit it wide. Just great heavy servers. And all of them are at the bottom half of the draw. But a couple of them that do stick out is Matteo Berrettini. He's an Italian. He won his second grass court event this season just a couple of weeks ago at Queen's Club. He was the first player since Boris Becker in the 60s to win on his debut event.
Oh, wow.
So that just tells you right there that he is a big, and he had 61 aces in that tournament to go on to win. And he won pretty comfortably, like every single match that he had. Maybe he struggled for a couple of points, but overall it was like kind of he walked into the final and he walked in through with his title. But his problem, he has never defeated a top 10 opponent.
Oh, wow.
So if he were to defeat, he's potentially going to meet Alexander Zverev, who is a top 10 player in the semifinals. He would have to get through that test.
Yeah.
So if he were to fall, it could be to Zverev. If he were to win, then I could definitely see him being.
How do you see that shaking out? That potential matchup.
You have to see. These are players we haven't seen too much Alexander Zverev on grass this season. He had, I mean, grass court season, first off, is a very short season. It's 1 month and mm-hmm. you cram it in. And we saw Zverev, he did fall to an up-and-coming player named Ugar Umber, and he defeated him. He lost to Umber, but it wasn't because Umber was fantastic. But that was a best of three. Now this is a best of five. If mm-hmm. you give Zverev a best of five opportunity, mm-hmm. the stronger top 10 players, more than likely, they're going to be the ones yeah. to come out on top. Mm-hmm. So in a best of five, I don't think that he would lose in that same situation. Mm. In this situation, I think this could definitely be an opportunity for Berrettini to come out. He is a fantastic player. He has the height. He has the reach. He's not only just a big serve, but he has the slice forehand. He has a slice. He can drop shot. He has variety in his game, unlike the other big servers who are just big servers. Mm-hmm. So if this would be his biggest test, if it does end up being Berrettini versus Zverev, my personal hope would be that Berrettini can push on through and this could be his breakout tournament.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Wow. All right. So a couple questions here. One, when you say he's never beat a top 10 opponent, is this an experience issue? He just hasn't had many opportunities, or has he had a lot of opportunities and just done terribly against the top 10 folks, you know?
He has had opportunities.
Okay.
And he's lost every single time. The okay. one top 10 opponent that he defeated was Dominic Thiem in 2019 at Shanghai. And this year, in 2021, he has faced Stefanos Tsitsipas. He's faced Alexander Zverev already. He has faced other players who are in the top 10. He cannot get push on through. Novak Djokovic, we saw him play in the quarterfinal at Roland Garros. That was a close match, though. To push the world number one, he won the third set tiebreak, and then he lost in the fourth set 7-5. So that's an indication that he's trying to push through. He's trying to knock through those doors. So potentially this could be the tournament where we see him finally break on through.
All right. What kind of odds do we have on him to go ahead and take this tournament? Because I'm getting excited hearing your analysis. Because again, I like those dogs. I like those dogs. And this is appealing to me for
sure.
There's
a few dogs that I do like. I did mention, I just wrote the Oddshark article this morning. It was posted about an hour ago, so you can check it out on oddshark.com. My full on analysis, but for Berrettini to win would be plus 1200. Novak, you have to understand, these are the odds. Djokovic is the minus 120 favorite. The second favorite behind him is Daniil Medvedev at plus 650.
Oh, wow.
So that just tells you the discrepancy that there is between the world number one and everybody else.
Yeah.
So when I say that it is Djokovic versus everyone else, it is literally Djokovic versus everyone else. And the odds are definitely indicating that as well.
Wow. Mm.
Is there anybody that you're like, I wouldn't touch them? I think that other people might have higher expectations for them, but I think they actually might disappoint in this tournament.
You know what? Federer is one of those players that I was so high on him in March. I took him. I thought I saw the odds for Federer, who has an 8-time Wimbledon winner. He has the most titles at Wimbledon than anybody else. And in March, when he was coming back from injury, he was out for the entire year of 2020 because of injury. He was coming back and I got really excited. I was like, he has the mind. He has the experience. Mm-hmm. He has everything under his belt. He has the weapons. What I love about Federer's game is he has absolute. You want to talk about variety of a player? It is Federer and then everybody else.
Wow.
He has a drop shot, the slice. He has a big serve. He can do the slice backhand. He has everything, every arsenal in his toolbox. He knows how to use it. He knows how to use it well. So when he was coming back from injury in March, I got really excited. We haven't seen it come to fruition to where, hey, he's an actual contender for Wimbledon, his home court. He last won here in 2017. And then before that, it was 2012. He's 5-3 in the season on 2021. And he did pass the eye test at Roland Garros. He got further than probably any of us thought that he would in round of 32. And then he withdrew in the round of 16 before he was going to meet Berrettini. And the reason for that, he cited that it was his knee. But he was back at Halle the very next week. It wasn't his knee. I really think he just got tired.
Yeah, wow.
He had a really tough match in the round of 16 against Dominic Kilkofer, and it probably took a toll on him.
Mm.
It went to tie breaks. It was really close. It was long. It was exhausting. And he came out like a champ, like the Federer champ that we all know. He passed the eye test, and I said, this is the Federer that I want to see.
Yeah.
But he hasn't shown. He lost at Halle, a tournament, which is grass court tournament, a tournament that he has won 10 of the last 17 years.
Wow.
Including 2019. In all 17 years, Federer has either made the quarterfinal or better, including 13 finals at Halle. And what did we see at Halle? He lost against Felix Auger-Aliassime. And it wasn't just fine if you lose, but in the third set, he completely gave up. He lost the third set 6-2. And he saw it in his eyes. He looked defeated. He looked like his mentally just escaped. And that is worrisome to me. So I don't think that I could be putting comfortably betting on Federer probably after like round two or three. I think in the early rounds, he's going to be good to go. And then after that, you're kind of just crossing your fingers and hoping that we see him get to the end.
Do you think Father Time is finally starting to take hold of Roger?
Not just with Federer. Yeah. I would say it's catching up with Nadal as well.
Yeah.
With Nadal, he's taking time off from, he said he's going to not play Wimbledon. He's not going to play Tokyo Olympics. And his next focus is going to be the US Open. Well, why is he doing that? He's 35. And nobody puts more miles on court than Nadal. He likes long points. He likes long rallies. He likes the grind. And now it's finally catching up. He's tired.
Unfortunately.
And better. Get these guys in touch with Tom Brady.
Yeah.
Well, because that dude's still rolling fine at 43.
But are they playing
whatever.
Seven matches in a 2 week period?
Fair,
best of five tournaments. Like it's a little different.
Yeah, yeah.
True
a little
story.
Bit more grueling.
A little bit more grueling. Yes, he is getting sucker punched by some of the biggest men on the planet.
Yeah.
But it's also just not the same when you are putting your body, the type of toll that you take traveling across the world, because all of these tournaments, they're not all in one place. They're not all in the same time zone.
That's very
2 hour difference. They are traveling across the world. They are limited by who they can take as part of their team to help them with recovery, to help their coaching, their staff, whatever team that they have to an ensemble. They're limited because every country has different stipulations. They're still in COVID. Everyone is having different COVID restrictions, and that's taking a toll on the body. They're doing quarantine situations still when the US is no longer.
Wow.
So they're still going through 2020 issues when the rest of the world is already catching up. Tie that into, let me play 2 weeks of seven matches that potentially could go They could go 3, 4, 5 hours. And now you're talking about a different type of body a different type of like pain and hurt and recovery that your body needs.
It's surprising they haven't been breaking down sooner. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With all of that wear and tear. And not to mention you're outside, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And a lot of times basketball, football, I mean, these guys are in air-conditioned domes and stuff, you know. So yeah,
that's true.
Big difference.
Sure.
Yeah.
Pamela, I remember asking you during episode one, kind of how do you break down a football game? And it was really interesting. You talked a lot about how you focus and hone in on the offensive line and defensive line and that matchup, the pass rush. So kind of a similar question when it comes to tennis, what are sort of the metrics or the stats or the things that you're looking at, not just for Wimbledon, but just in general? I mean, how do you get a beat on what you think is going to happen?
It's entirely different. What I do for college football and NFL is 100%. I start at stats. There's a certain group of numbers that I look at. Those numbers help me decide which games I'm going to deep dive into. Tennis, I watch every single match. And when I say I watch every single match, I am up at 4 or 5 a.m.
Wow.
I have a genuine love for this game, and I have no idea what stats exist. None whatsoever. I can tell you right off the top of my head the players who have the good serve, the players who struggle against left-handers, the players who have a good slice, the players who are just baseline game. I can tell you all of that, and I can't tell you what any percentage of anything is.
Wow.
Mostly what I look at is head-to-head matchup. If you have, especially somebody like Federer and Djokovic, these players, Federer and Nadal and Djokovic, they've all played against each other 15, 20 times. So I look at that more so than anything. And how are you doing recently? Okay, have you played? We have Wimbledon coming up. That's a grass court. Did you play grass this season? There's players like Stefanos Tsitsipas, who was in the final, his first major final at Roland Garros. He has not played any grass leading up into Wimbledon. That's important to know. So it's stuff like that I look at. And so it is entirely different process. But more so it comes into, I do take the time to watch these matches because it helps with betting, but also because I just love it.
Yeah.
So if you don't mind the early morning wake up calls, then tennis is for you.
Absolutely.
She's like, I'm not DVR in this thing. I want to watch it live.
I don't want to know.
Waking up at like 3, 4 a.m.
So there's a story for that. This morning, I knew that the draw was coming out. They're in London time. So all of a sudden, like my alarm is set at like 6:30. But my internal clock, something woke me up in the middle of the night. I kid you not. At like 4:30, I was like, the draw's out. And I checked my phone and they had just released it like 8 minutes prior. Wow. And like, I don't know. That was just like freaking me. I was like, this is a sign.
You feel it. Yeah, you feel it. Yeah.
And I just woke up and I knew. And yeah. Sure enough.
That's hilarious, man.
I'm curious, Pamela. We just had Dave Richard on, fantasy football expert. And, you know, like you, he's giving suggestions. And, mm-hmm. and like you, some people are winning or losing money based on these suggestions, right? So one thing we asked him that I want to ask you the same question. Do you ever have the negative assholes who reach out and say, what the heck? You said this was going to happen. Like expecting you to be right 100% of the time. Does that ever happen through social media? And how do you deal with that if it does?
I'll be honest and say I don't have too much experience with that. Fortunately, knock on wood.
Nice. Yeah.
I think the reason for that is one, I've been doing this for a while. Yes. But before I got into sports betting as like my job for Oddshark, I was doing this. I was in poker. I was in the poker world, but I was still giving away picks. But I was never just like, hey, here are the Longhorns, take them +7 to win. Or it would take them whatever money line. Mm-hmm. I never did just that. I always gave a reason to back up the reason why I was taking it. Mm-hmm. And well, I ended up doing well. That's one that helps. If you do well, you're probably not going to get too much hate. Yeah. But then, yeah, I do go on bad streaks where like, crap, I cannot get anything right. Mm-hmm. And tennis is a good example of that. And I used to absolutely dominate tennis, but then COVID happened and it has changed the dynamic of tennis entirely because of all of the restrictions that I mentioned earlier.
Yep.
And then we have a lot of up and coming players that we didn't see before the pandemic because no fans in the stands has allowed them to kind of catch up a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's helped.
Yeah.
So I've been having to like relearn or learn about some of these players. Fortunately though, I still don't get this hate. I get more support than anything, but I think that the reason why is because no matter what, whether it's tennis, whether it's golf, no matter what it is, I think it's evident that I do put in the time, that I do put in the effort, and I can give you like stats and data and things to like back up why I'm taking it is what I'm taking.
Yeah.
And as long as you're like forthcoming, and I always give a record too. I'm very honest about, I'm having a crappy tennis season.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or I'm like kind of crushing this week, but that is followed up after having a really bad last week. So I think if you're honest with your fans and with your audience, with your followers on Twitter, like more often than not, they're going to kind of be understanding. And then eventually you kind of see like, oh, well, nobody's really even paying attention anyway, because they know that you're kind of on like this bad streak.
Yeah. Mm.
Then as soon as you kind of ride the wave, they'll ride the wave with you. And they're like, man, I hung in there. And like, thanks for, yeah, you just got to wait. Like that's what it comes. It comes in waves sometimes.
That's awesome. Do you have any favorite stories of a time when people kind of got on your bandwagon, your suggestion, and everybody, you know, hit all at once and kind of was celebrating? It's kind of like being at the blackjack table when the dealer busts, you know? But do you have any sort of underdog good line stories that are memorable for you in your time doing this?
I mean, I've had a few actually, but the biggest one that I would say was in 2019, I did my first bodybuilding competition. Don't ever do a bodybuilding competition in the middle of football season. It is so hard.
Yeah.
Trying to do an hour of cardio for 7 days a week and then your workout and then trying to study for football. It is very time consuming. However, I crushed. So I ended up leading up the week of my competition is your hardest. You're mentally exhausted. You're just like, I just want to get this over with. But you also have football going on. So I was like, okay, well, I have football. I was like, well, the way the bodybuilding works is you come out in the morning, you do your posing, the judges, they judge you. And then there's like a few hour break and then you come back for the finals. And during that time, I was like, well, shit, what am I going to do? I was like, I'm just going to sit here for a few hours. I was like, I'll just do some football. And so I wasn't planning on doing football that day. I was like, I'm focused on this is my competition. It's my first one. I'm going to do that. Instead, I went into football. I ended up giving 12 plays. And I was like, I like so much today. I was like, this could either go really well or it's going to just like bomb and I'm going to fall on my face.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I ended up going 11-1. And I think it was an over and it missed by 1 point or something.
Wow.
So it was like a barely miss.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was already doing well leading up into that. But that day, because I was already doing so well, because there was already momentum behind me doing this competition, I had people like, especially looking at my timeline for that day, I had so many. So not only did I end up placing in my first bodybuilding competition, but then I ended up absolutely dominating 11 in one day. And I had so many people who were like, I was able to buy this off of your tickets. I did a 10 team parlay. I did a 12 team parlay. I did an 11 team parlay. They just had, and it was just like absolutely amazing to see, like, wow, like everybody not like blind tailed. And I gave a reason for every single one. Yeah. But then just basically like they took my stuff and they trusted me. That's and then awesome. They're like, I was able to do this. I bought my family a dinner. I ended up buying a trip to Hawaii because of all the money that I made off of this. Like it was so really awesome. great
what
day
for
a lot
this?
Of people. That was 2019.
Nice. Badass.
Just spreading joy all across the United States of America. Yeah.
And looking good doing it because that was like 100 and something pounds because of the weight competition.
Santa Pam over here. Just everybody, you get a trip to Hawaii. You get a trip to Hawaii. Everybody's going to Hawaii.
This is stuff like what you see a lot on Twitter is you see a lot of people who are like, they retweet all the praise that they get. Yeah. I don't do that. I've never once done that. It's praise for me. Like, I appreciate that you're coming to me as the personal sentiment of you were able to do this for me. Think I get it as a DM. I'm never going to screenshot it and then post it.
Like, yeah.
Like, between me and that person. Yeah. And I appreciate those types of messages. And so like I'll also never be that person who like retweets the hate. Like, oh, look at this jerk.
Yeah, don't give them a platform.
For those of you who are novice bettors out there, 11-1 in the NFL.
Amazing.
Is absolutely ridiculous. They say like 53%
college football.
My bad. Okay.
Even that.
Still, for sure. 11-1 is ridiculous. They say 53% is kind of, you know, the money line where you start making money at that point. So I'm terrible at math, but 11-1 is over 90%. It's ridiculous.
It's over
100%. Nice work awesome. On that. That's badass. And so we keep saying it, but I'm going to say it again. This is why you need to follow Bam on Twitter. Super important.
Some
for
football's
sure.
coming up.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, we got some football. We got camp about to start. We got college football about to start here as well. We got the NBA playoffs going to be getting into the finals here soon.
I can't wait.
It's a perfect time to go to Oddshark, place a bet on some stuff. I'm going to put some money down on some of these conference finals games.
Yeah, man. And you get those bonuses on Oddshark to go to other websites, which is nice
and
for sure.
One thing that we didn't mention, which is so important on Oddshark, is that if you go there, you can compare lines across so many different sites. You know, you don't want to just be going to one or two sites because you have the potential to miss out on hundreds, if not thousands of dollars. If you're not shopping around, getting the best pick, getting the best number, and Oddshark has all that information and it's absolutely free. You don't have to pay anything for this. It's not a membership service or some kind. Right. You got all the odds, all the lines right in front of you, and then you can go to each respective site and make your pick.
Yeah.
Make yourself a little bit more money. Get the best number you can.
Yeah.
There's nothing more frustrating than if you do win, you do hit on something, and you find out later you could have got a way better number somewhere. You're like, damn it. Could have went to Hawaii for 2 weeks. This is crazy. I spent a week down there.
I'm trying to find on Twitter another prop that I did. I really just like grew this love for doing NFL player props. And I hit a plus 13,000 prop parlay in January. It was in week 17. And I can't find it because I can't remember what wording that I used.
So this would have been at the end of
last season. It was week 17.
Yeah.
It was the last season. Yeah, of last season in the NFL. And it was plus 13,000. And it was a good tip for the 2021 season. At the end, the weeks, it only works for week 17. You have a lot of players who are targeting their bonuses.
Yeah, yeah.
They have records to break. Yep. So what I did is I looked through all the possible records and bonuses that players were getting. Yep. And you have to figure out. And there was probably like 20 options between Russell Wilson. And then you had Derrick Henry, whatever it was, look through all the options. And I thought, okay, which ones are actually feasible? Mm-hmm. And then I did two prop parlays. One of them was, okay, what is their minimum for the day. So if Derrick Henry needed 200 yards, well, that's like his long shot that he's going to get. But like his bare minimum was that he'll have over 95 rushing yards or something like that. So take the minimum and do that on whatever players that you decide. And then my long shot prop parlay, which is plus 13,000, was they are going to hit their records. They're going to get their bonuses by doing these marks. And I think it was like a 5-player prop parlay. And that's why it ended up being plus 13,000.
Wow.
And last all I needed was Derrick Henry to hit his 2,000 yard record. And he needed, I don't know, like 200 something yards for that. And that's all I needed. So I took him as on plus money. It was like plus 700 for him to have 200 rushing yards in the game. That was a lone bet. And then he was the last prop on that I needed to complete the parlay.
Whoa.
And it hit.
Damn.
And that was amazing. But you can only do that in week 17.
Yeah.
And you can't just like throw all of them on there because, hey, it's unlikely that all of them are going to hit their bonuses and records.
One guy's not
going
to get 3.5 sacks.
You can start looking at which games really have no implications on the playoffs. You know what I mean? Because then a coach might be more likely to help their player out. You know what I mean? In a situation
and
like that.
And you knew that Derrick Henry, they wanted him to hit that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you saw it in the week before. It was like, well, just pass the ball. Nope, they're running. They kept handing it over to Derrick Henry.
I think people should take their phones out right now and put a little reminder for week 17 next season
seriously.
To rewatch this episode and remember that because that is like a really good idea. Pamela, how do you find these are minor details in someone's contract that they signed. So do you have a source where you can see all at once what these where these are at? Or are you like looking in the individual contracts?
A lot
or
of
what?
The main media ends up posting them. You'll see them on ESPN. You'll see them on Bleacher Report. Right, they're all posting articles of like, oh, well, what is it? Derrick Henry. And is he going to hit the 2,000 yard mark for the season? Or what was the other player? I can't remember all the players that I had on there, but Russell Wilson or Tom Brady. He needed to have two touchdowns. He needed to have two passing touchdowns in order to break his own personal record that he had of most touchdowns in the season.
Yeah.
Something like that. And it's like you have like maybe I'm not going to spend the time and look at every single team, every single player.
Yeah.
But I like this matchup. Mm-hmm. Derrick Henry against a bad rush defense. That seems to make sense. And so you kind of correlate it that way. And is there any incentive for him to do well? There is. Tag him on.
Yeah. Yeah. I see those articles every year almost, man. And they're really interesting to see because some guys, you know, they need like a half a sack or some guy needs like 4 catches or something like that. It's super interesting.
And you end up seeing them pretty early on, like around week 14, 15, because they're running out of time to complete those incentives to get those bonuses.
That makes
awesome.
That makes a lot
so much great information today. Yeah. This is such a great interview. And make sure you get, like we said, make sure you give her a follow on Twitter at PamelaM35, or if you're Tony, Pam Elam 35. She's got great information on
there. I found the tweet.
Okay, there it is.
There we go.
It was on January 3rd, and I called it my everyone is breaking records today. Long shot prop parlay. Week 17. Let's go. And it was Justin Jefferson to have 111 receiving yards, Lamar Jackson to have 92 rushing yards, Brady to have 3 passing touchdowns, Henry to have 223 rushing yards, and then Aaron Rodgers to have 2 passing touchdowns. The odds were plus 11,560.
Damn.
And it was Aaron Rodgers, he needed 1 passing touchdown to tie his own record of passing touchdowns in a single season, and he needed 2. That's why I added 2 to break it.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you look for stuff like that.
Yeah. That's so interesting.
Badass. I've been doing sports betting a while, and that thought has not crossed my mind to look at that week 17. That is really, really good information.
Maybe we should just edit this out so we don't like help the books here. Give us bad odds.
Yeah, right? No kidding. Yeah.
Give us bad odds. Just ignore everything I just said.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah, follow her on Twitter, everybody. You get all this information. Go to oddshark.com. Check out her articles and everything. I'm not saying that you're definitely going to get a trip to Hawaii, but it's a possibility. You know what I'm saying?
There's precedent.
I think it helped. I think it at least helped him get a champagne on the flight.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. You're going to get a couple extra spritzers at the swim up bar because of Pamela. So make sure you give her a follow. Pam, thanks for coming on the DMP CD Sports Podcast. Really appreciate it. It's great to get you in studio finally now that COVID and everything is calming down a little bit. We love having you in studio. We'd love to have you in again, like come football season. Tell us some of those week 1 bets and everything. That'd be great.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to football.
Here. Can't wait. Well, we got 12 more Sundays, I think.
I think so,
like that.
Yeah,
exactly. That's not bad at all, man. It's right around the corner.
We're not counting.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's not 10 till college football. Who knows? Somewhere around there. But yeah, make sure to give her a follow on Twitter. Check out our articles. Also go over to oddshark.com, the place to learn more about the odds, learn more about some of these big matchups that are coming up. Read Pam's tennis stuff. One of the most knowledgeable people I've ever spoken to about tennis. So that was really awesome. So thanks for coming on the show, Pam. And we'll see. We got another guest coming in here shortly as well. Let's take a quick second to tell you about one of our favorite sponsors on the show.
That's right, Chad. 1740 Beard Balm. You can go check them out at 1740beardbalm.com. This here is their signature product, the actual Beard Balm. But they've got a whole bunch of other stuff on their website. They've got chapstick. They've got beard soap. So if you've got a beard out there and you want to kind of make it look a little sharp, you got a big date coming up or something like that, make sure and check out these products, 1740beardbalm.com. com. And then also, if you happen to have any funny texts, you want to send them to us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, 1740 Beard Bomb will actually send you some of their products and a gift card if it's funny enough for us to read on the air. So yeah, please engage with us on social media and you'll get something free out of it too.
Yeah, make sure you check out their website, 1740beardbomb.com. Like you said, they got soap and everything like that. You can't be showing up to a date with your beard smelling like butt. You know what I'm saying? You want to smell good. You want to smell like some carnival apple? There you go. Right here. It's right. This stuff's amazing, man.
You put deodorant on your armpits. You brush your teeth with toothpaste. Your beard needs a little love, too. So you're not stinky.
It can't be stinky as all hell, you know. So check out 1740beardbomb.com. All right, our second guest today is a senior NFL analyst and content director for NBC Sports. She's also the co-host of the Three and Out podcast. And like me, she's a long-suffering Cleveland sports fan. Please welcome to the show, Samantha Bunton. Thanks for coming on the show. How are you doing today?
Doing well. Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, that's great. We've got a this is an exciting time for me because I'm a huge Cleveland sports fan, and it's awesome to talk shop with someone that knows a little bit about it. Because right now it's a very polarizing time for a lot of the Cleveland sports teams. We're finally got a good football team, it seems like. But before we get into all that, I want to ask you, Samantha, first things first, is this true? I saw you tweet this recently. In high school, you were given a flagrant foul for yelling "you fucking bitch" at a girl that cheated during a track meet, and you were disqualified for that. That's pretty hardcore, girl. Hey, you ain't messing around.
This is true. Yeah, it's actually very out of character for me, or at least at that time. Not a big cursor, but I lost my temper. I was fed up. This is, by the way, this was all in reference to the SCOTUS ruling the other day.
Okay.
About the foul mouth high school cheerleader.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Off of her squad. And yeah, my point was that technically I had done something way worse because I did it on school grounds during a meet where they absolutely can kick you out for something like that. But then this girl stepped into the infield and tried to pass on the inside. She did it twice. She'd done it to my teammate in an earlier race. The official saw it. It didn't do anything. I just lost my temper and, you know, there you have it. And
you know, you can't do that
for me, but
this girl knows she can't do that. What is wrong with her?
Oh, she knew.
Oh yeah. What a jackass. But I want to ask you, so let's get to the Browns first. Do you think the Browns addressed their needs to free agency and the draft? I felt like they had holes on every level of defense and it felt like they addressed a lot of those. What's your perception?
For the most part, I think they did. I'm still a little bit nervous about the secondary. I mean, love the John Johnson acquisition. Obviously, I think that's huge. It's very, very important to me to have a smart safety, sort of a quarterback of the defense type of guy back there, and especially with the type of defense that Joe Woods is building, where he's really trying to sometimes create, I guess, some base packages that would have three, maybe even four safeties on the field at the same time. So they needed volume, and I think they did a decent job with that. The linebacker stuff, I guess it depends on how you look at what Woods is doing. Do you really need the linebackers? It's obviously not a system that values that very much. So I guess it's sort of dependent on how committed he is to doing sort of a very, very, I guess, I don't know, alternative form of basic defense, whether or not you can kind of let that go or not. Love what they did up front. You know, I think it's a little hard when there are no big splashy moves outside of clowning, if you want to call that a splashy move, which at this point in his career is you know, I would rather they did this and that they didn't kind of, you know, blow themselves up from a calf perspective for years to come. And that way they can add pieces in the future if they need to and still have some maneuverability to do that.
Yeah, no splashy moves, but in a way you're kind of adding OBJ because he's coming back from injury, mm-hmm. right? And you didn't have him down the stretch run. You didn't have him in the playoffs. I would say as a Browns fan, which I'm not, thankfully,
You're welcome.
As a Browns fan, that's got to be exciting that your team gets the playoffs without a guy like this, and now he's coming back. So I want to ask you about him, Samantha, and a little bit of context. We just had Dave Richard on the show. He was not optimistic about the outlook for OBJ. He didn't use the word decoy, but he kind of implied that he could be a decoy in the future and not racking up a lot of stats. He says he hasn't had really a good season since 2016, which is hard to argue with. What are your thoughts about his outlook going forward?
I think you have to kind of look at it the same way we looked at getting to the playoffs last season, getting as far as they did, which is it's anything that is beyond whatever your base level expectations are is you're playing with house money. And I'm not the most optimistic about OBJ. He's a little bit more flash than substance to me. You know, we all get very excited when we see things like one-handed catches and we forget that that's not necessarily representative of what this person does in the day-to-day. And he's a great receiver. He's incredibly talented. He says all the right things, or at least right now he's saying the right things. I'm a little bit worried about the distribution of the ball and how he's going to react to that. I mean, the decoy thing is interesting. Sure, I think it would be a great role for him. I'm not saying he always has to be the decoy, but I think it would be helpful in the way that the Browns offense is set up. But is he going to be receptive to playing that role? I know he's talking like he is right now, but we'll see.
Do you think there's a chemistry issue between him and Baker?
I think there could be. I'm not even sure we have enough evidence to determine that. But I will say this. He's certainly never been the guy who Baker, and I guess now we're basing it mostly on sort of off-field things, right? What does Baker talk about? What does he say about his receivers? How does he seem to approach these guys? Who does he highlight in a situation where he's not asked about anyone specific? It's not OBJ. So maybe there's a chemistry issue. Maybe they just haven't spent enough time together.
Yeah. We'll see, because Baker got a little bit more efficient as OBJ went out last year too.
That was the funny thing. You subtract this.
It's crazy. I never thought that would happen.
You got this all pro guy. This guy that's got an all pro background, Pro Bowl background. You subtract him, and then all of a sudden the quarterback gets better. And I say, what's going on there?
Yeah,
something's going on there.
Yeah, it's crazy. Speaking of Baker Mayfield, he became much more efficient last year, as we alluded to there, with under first year coach Kevin Stefanski. His interceptions were way down, and to me, he just looked way more comfortable in the pocket. What do you expect from Baker Mayfield in his second year in this Kevin Stefanski offense?
I assume he'll only get better. This is the first time he's been able to play in the same system 2 years in a row. And I know we were fortunate that Baker has experience. He switched schools while he was in college, so it's probably a little bit easier for him, even as a very young quarterback in the NFL, to change offenses, change head coaches early on. But it's not good for anybody, right? I mean, nobody is the better because they are forced to learn a new offense and respond to a new play caller every single season. Finally got the right play caller in place, and now he's going to be in his second year under him. I just think he's more comfortable there, and certainly they're giving him better tools to succeed than they were 2 years ago.
Yeah, so I want to get into the defense a little bit, because as we alluded to, I felt like there was holes on every level of the defense. We addressed some of those with free agency, and we'll get into free agency here in a little bit. But in the 2021 NFL draft, the first two picks the Browns used were on defense. They went and got Greg Newsome, the second cornerback out of Northwestern, and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramora, out of the linebacker out of Notre Dame, with a second round pick, and a lot of people didn't expect him to be available that late in the second round. How big of an impact do you think those two guys can have next year? We also got Greedy Williams coming back, who was injured last year. We don't know; he was a second round pick. We don't know what we have in him. But what do you see from some of those young guys in the defense there?
Well, I really liked Greedy Williams, so I'm really eager to see what he can do. I think if he's healthy, if he can stay healthy, which at this point is definitely a question mark, I think he'll be a productive player from there. And Newsome, I'll be honest and say I'm just happy to see a corner coming in who's not a midget. Those little teeny corners drive me crazy. It just makes me absolutely insane. I want to see height there. They have not been great about this in the past, so I'm happy to see that. JOK is a huge steal. I mean, he fell way down the board, which I think is mostly because the Browns have a unique use for him. I think they're going to line him up as safety. He's listed, of course, as a linebacker, which is probably why he fell down the board, because I don't think he actually fits the traditional definition of what you would need out of a linebacker. The Browns, he's a great fit. So that's a nice grab there. I think they took him far enough back that they can kind of mess around with that a little bit. He doesn't have to be an immediate impact player. They can move him around a little bit and see where he fits best. But I think because he had a unique set of skills that matched the unique set of needs that the Browns had, that they can actually do something really productive with him, I would think, this season, certainly.
Yeah, it was nice to see them address the defense, because I felt like last year, I'm sure you did as a Browns fan as well, that had we just been even like mediocre on defense, well, this could have been a completely different team. This is a possible AFC championship team, if not a Super Bowl team, with his efficient and as well we ran the ball. Felt like what we had been missing the year prior was just a sense of calmness on the offense, a sense of calmness and direction from a lot of the players on the team. We felt like a peewee football team under Freddie Kitchen. And so it felt like there's some professionalism that was brought back to the organization that we've been lacking and been missing for quite some time. But with the draft, like we said, we got Greg Newsome and JOK. I always felt like we were missing speed on the outside offensively. And so I was extremely, extremely excited to see the Browns in the third round. They went and got Anthony Schwartz, He was tabbed, as some people said, that he was the fastest guy in the draft. Do you think he's going to bring another element to this offense and allow us to stretch the field a little bit, especially when we, you know, we've had injury problems with OBJ recently?
Yeah, I think it's an insurance policy for that. Obviously, OBJ is going to get the majority of the targets if he is healthy, unless he proves to be a problem in some other way, if he's not productive or what have you. But I love the insurance there. And like you said, you know, they really didn't have enough speed, especially outside downfield. I don't love the fact that they were really, really limited for the most part to a short game. So I think that's helpful. I don't love where they're at the tight end position completely at this point. So that helps a little bit to mitigate that as well.
Yeah, totally agree.
I want to ask you guys both a question, being Browns fans. Every week during the NFL season, I try to identify a game or two that I'm not going to touch because it scares the hell out of me. Okay. Mm-hmm. Week one next season, is Kansas City and Cleveland, right? Last I've seen, Kansas City is a 6-point favorite. The public loves Kansas City for good reason. They've got all that firepower. I don't have the guts to take the Browns, but I am staying the hell away from that Kansas City line because I see the Browns. This is a revenge game for them. Kansas City ended their season and they were very much in that game. Remember, Mahomes got hurt.
Yeah, we should have won with the fumble. Yeah.
So I see the Browns coming in fired up. I think they're going to be live in that game. So I'm just not going to touch it because I don't trust the Browns. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
but I do not trust the Chiefs in that game. What are your thoughts on, and it's early, we haven't had preseason, but just what are your initial thoughts on that week one game?
I mean, I'll go first real quick and then Samantha can follow up, but I'll say that I think that we're getting them at the perfect time. They got a completely revamped offensive line. I think you know, our defensive line is going to be much improved over last year. We had, you know, Myles Garrett and pretty much a bunch of other guys that were just kind of gap guys, you know. But this year, you know, I'm not saying Clowney is going to be great. I don't think he's ever been like a great defensive end in his career, but I do think that he's going to help Myles Garrett, take some of the pressure off of him and everything like that. And I think we're getting their team at a perfect time. Samantha, what are your thoughts?
From a gambling perspective, if we're looking at the line, to me, it's a stay away, but everything in week one is a stay away.
Yeah, right.
Week one and week 17, or now it will be week 18, a stay away for very different reasons. But if you look at week one, NFL is chaos. Like, all kinds of people are beating all kinds of people who they shouldn't beat. We have lots of upsets. And these are pretty evenly matched teams, so it could go either way. Plus, games like this, these sort of very, the league sets this up to pit either people who have met recently in a contentious playoff matchup or people who they believe will meet in potentially an AFC or NFC championship game. Remember how a couple of years ago we had the Chiefs-Patriots matchup like this, where everybody expects the Patriots to roll over them and the Chiefs actually came out on top of it. So
Absolutely. That's
the kind of thing that makes me think the Browns will win this. But these are, they're designed to be games that could go either way. And week one NFL, But I don't, to your point, Chiefs, a lot of overhaul there. So it's a good opportunity for the Browns. If you have to play Kansas City during the regular season, this is the time to do it.
Yeah, it definitely is.
Yeah, good point on that KC New England game. That was in Foxborough too. Nobody saw that coming.
Yes.
No.
I mean, that was a shocker.
Definitely. So we talked about some of the draft picks, and the Browns used 5 of their 8 picks on defense this year. They also picked up some big time free agents, which we alluded to. They signed John Johnson III. He was a safety from the Rams. They got him on a 3-year deal. They also got Zacharis McKinley. They got Troy Hill, Malik Jackson, Anthony Walker. We re-signed Baker's buddy, Rashard Higgins, one of my favorite players on the team as well. But then they also brought in Clowney. How improved do you expect this defense to be next year? It has to be better than what it was last year, and especially in the defensive backfield, right?
Absolutely. I actually don't think it's going to look anything like the defense that we saw a year ago, especially in the secondary, which is huge because we don't want to see that again. That was awful. It's kind of a miracle they did as well as they did with the secondary being what it was. But yeah, I think, you know, again, the John Johnson addition is huge. Kinley to me, pretty important. The Rashard Higgins being re-signed goes without saying. I mean, that would have been, I probably would have rioted had they not done that. Yeah. So I'm right there with you on that one. And Jadeveon Clowney, to me, that's the value of that is certainly, I mean, we have to be realistic about this. Dude's not a sack machine, right? He's really somebody who you're bringing in to kind of contain the edges. So it's not going to be the big flashy thing that I think some people are hoping if you're thinking back to Clowney right after he was drafted. But, you know, he's also, can we forget, because he's been injured so many times and he had that really serious list rank injury, he was out for so long and he's only 28 years old.
Wow.
So he has a lot left to give. And I think that in the role that the Browns want to use him in, it's going to be huge. They have had so many problems containing on the side over the edge, and that's
stopping the run as
to
well.
To me, what he's coming in to do is to stuff the run.
And he's a great run stopping defensive end, which would help us immensely. That's something that we desperately needed as well. Someone on the edge out there to contain it.
For sure. Samantha, we can't bring you on without asking a prediction for a number of wins for the Browns. They seem to have a pretty favorable schedule. I mean, you can't complain about it too much, I don't think. How many wins is realistic, and can they contend for the division?
I'm going to say 12. It could be 13. It could be 11. I mean, you go through and you count it up over and over again. Like you said, I was surprised. It is a more favorable schedule than I was anticipating. Those division games are tough. You know, I mean, you kind of expect to split with Baltimore, even if you believe the Browns are the better team. You may even split with Pittsburgh. Cincinnati is kind of an unknown at this point. Mm-hmm. I would hope the Browns could take two from them, but it's always tougher to play the guys in your own division. Everybody's going to play you harder, even when you're at the top of the pile. And to me, it's the Browns' division to lose. They should win this division. They are the most talented team. They have the best roster of anyone in this division, but Baltimore is a tough customer, and you have to be careful not to dismiss them. And Pittsburgh has made the mistake of dismissing Baltimore, dismissing Cleveland at times in the past, and has come back to bite them. Look what happened to the Steelers last year, going up against
wanting
the Browns.
To play the Browns. Yeah,
right. You don't want to be the guy who makes that mistake. So as long as the Browns, I think, kind of stay on top of it, and I'll be honest, I don't love it. I would much rather be the team that was underestimated and snuck up on somebody and kind of hits them from behind while they're not paying attention. But, you know, such as things are, it's a good problem to have, right?
Yeah. I've got them going 13-4. Do you think 12 wins I think 13 definitely will, but do you think 12 wins would get them the division?
Probably. It's tough. I mean, when you add the extra game this year, it's a little bit difficult to say, okay, that people have been looking into this already, just sort of from a statistical perspective, in the sense that, well, do you just tack one win on to the total and whatever you thought it was before, it's one more than that? I'm just not entirely certain that it's going to work that way. So theoretically, I think 12 should be enough, but because we have the extra game, I mean, it may be 13, and Baltimore is a really outstanding regular season team. Mm-hmm. Not so hot in the playoffs, but you may need that 13th win to get there.
Yeah, totally agree.
Who has the best head coach in your division? You got Harbaugh, you got Tomlin, and obviously Stefanski's doing really well.
Yeah.
Who do you give the nod to there?
Well, I mean, you got to go Harbaugh because he's Harbaugh and Tomlin because they both won Super Bowls, you know, but Kevin Stefanski is a great hire. He's exactly what the Browns needed. We needed some stability. I could tell in Freddie Kitchens for his one and only year in Cleveland, by week one, I could tell that this was an incredibly undisciplined team. I think they set the record against the Raiders for most penalties and penalty yards in a game. You could just tell they were completely undisciplined. They were not focused. And that starts at the head coach. You take on the personality of your coach. And that's what I felt like from week one. It was a glaring red flag that we were not going to be disciplined. And that was the entire season. That was a microcosm of it.
And also not disciplined off the field, because they were running their damn mouths about how good they were going to be And to me, that also is a reflection on the head coach as well.
I think Samantha would agree with this, that Baker Mayfield has taken on a completely different persona. The way he speaks to the media, he's more reserved and calculated in the way he speaks and everything like that. Would you agree?
Yes. And I think Baker is one of those. I mean, ideally you want the guy to go the direction that Baker was going at the beginning rather than the other, right? I'd way rather have a guy who's way too hot headed, who I needed to tell to calm down a little bit, than a guy who was sluggish and apathetic.
Yep.
It's really, really hard to create fire in a person who doesn't have any. It's way easier to teach discipline to somebody who's a little bit too much. And as much as we love some of the sound bites, you know, Baker, he woke up feeling dangerous. We all love that, right? But he also needed to learn not to pop off
much. And
he's gotten so much better at that.
Yeah, and you can tell that was a point of emphasis with this new regime, because he is way more calculated. He's not as bombastic and everything like that. He chooses his words more carefully, and he's not trying to give a bulletin board material. He doesn't want to be that quarterback. He wants to be a quarterback that's known for what he does on the field and not just him talking a bunch of shit, you know? So it's good to see that change in him, because I'm really excited. This is the most excited Browns fans have been in I don't know how long, man. So counting down the weeks until week one.
Rightfully so.
But let's switch gears a little bit and talk about the Tribe. The Indians, right as of right now, they're just a couple games back of Chicago for first place in the division. How are they able to do this with all the injuries to the pitching staff? You know, Shane Bieber's been out. Zach Plesac has been injured. The catcher, Roberto Perez, has missed a lot of time. And just when you think it can't get any worse, I'm watching the game against the Cubs the other night, and Aaron Civale injured his finger. We don't know how long he's going to be out. They haven't really said. And then on top of that, the best power hitter in the lineup, arguably the best hitter on the team, Franmil Reyes, has been injured as well. How are they able to only be a couple games back at Chicago with all these injuries?
It's sorcery. It's something like rooster. I don't know. I was convinced it was, I guess it would have been before Civale, but right when Bieber got hurt, yeah. I thought, forget it. Yep. We're done.
Yeah, I said the same thing.
Half starting pitchers, yep. If you count McKenzie as like a half, yeah. It's good for about four innings.
Yeah.
So you can't, it's not sustainable, right? And then, but the weird thing about it is they're actually much, much closer to Chicago than they were. Mm-hmm. Back before Bieber got hurt, they were five games back. Yeah. Now they're two games back.
Wow.
So some of that you have to attribute to the fact that Chicago has really been struggling lately. And I think there's been, you know, to me, I wonder about their road record. They have not been good on the road, and they have not played very many games on the road. And that may be what helps the Indians to survive this, but it's rough. I mean, right now they're doing great. I would never have thought they could last this long. And it's now you get it into your head and you're thinking, well, of course we can do this. Like, look how long we've been making.
Yeah.
Of course we can play, yeah. Run four bullpen games a week, which no, you'll run your entire bullpen.
Yeah.
Round is obviously not sustainable, but can they hang on long enough? A lot of that is going to depend on whether Chicago continues to struggle a little bit and leaves the door open for them.
Yeah. So my answer to that would be, the same thing. It's been a miracle one, but also it's just like Tito Francona. I think he's one of the best, yes. Managers in baseball. He's probably my favorite Indians manager, him and Mike Hargrove of all time. And I would ask you, Samantha, he's got to be the front runner for manager of the year, right? This would be his third AL manager of the year award in his career. If we're able to somehow, even if we make the wild card, you would think he's a front runner for the manager of the year.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, you can make an argument that he is very much in the running for that. No matter what, considering, mm-hmm. what he has been able to do with very minimal payroll. And yeah. That goes for the Indians front office and mostly their player development team as well. I mean, these pitchers are just kind of coming out of nowhere.
Yep.
These guys are coming in and eating up the innings. But a lot of that is Terry Francona. And Tito just, I mean, I would have said the same thing as you did. If they get to the playoffs in any capacity, that he's automatically the manager,
yeah.
of the year. Because you should never be able to survive more than a month with no bona fide starters.
Yep.
None.
And Tristan McKenzie's kind of regressed this year. I was looking for, he yes. was last year, he was a lightning rod, and I was really excited about him. I actually watched every one of his starts after his first start. I made it a point to watch every time he started. And he's been a little disappointing this year. But you're right. It seems like last night, who we have, Mejia came in, I believe, and I never even heard of this guy. They're just bringing these guys up. Oh, by the way, we got another 25-year-old right-hander that's in AAA that no one's ever heard of that's going to come up and give you six pitching and stuff. You know, so it's like, it's crazy. Their player development is crazy. And then you mentioned their payroll. It's only $53 million. There's a couple guys on the Dodgers making more than that as an entire team. And so it has been quite amazing, because it feels like that's how the Indians are going to win, is that it has to be this confluence of perfect events. We always seem to have great pitching. It's we've always got like eight or nine guys that are batting 220 or lower or something like that, and they somehow still end up, if you look at the run differential, I think we're only like plus six or seven or something like that. We're 10 games, yeah. above 500, you know, plus a few, and there's other teams that are, you know, plus 60 or something like that. Houston's going on a tear and everything, but it would be amazing. And if we can get this pitching staff healthy, it'd be interesting to see what we could do in the playoffs, because we all know that pitching is incredibly important come playoff time. And you never know. You know what I'm saying? We've got a puncher's chance, at least, I think.
Well, maybe some of these guys that are now chewing up innings as starters can be bumped to the bullpen and, yeah. actually play a role in the playoffs, you know, in long relief,
yeah.
or something like that.
Get some more depth there,
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, which is pretty exciting. Samantha, I got to ask, what are your thoughts on this craziness with the checking for substances and the belts and the hats? And are your thoughts, man? Well, it's wild.
Major League Baseball has made such a hash of this. They came out and said that they wanted to study this and that, don't worry, this year is the discovery phase. Mm. And then like a month and a half later, it was like, oh, no, we're done. Now we're checking. It's a nightmare. And I completely understand where all these pitchers are coming from. And they're saying, like, look, I've thrown 80 innings doing what I do, and now you're telling me I have to completely change the way that I pitch. It's not realistic. And as much as you want to catch people who are using things like spider tack and excessive amounts of pine tar, things like sunscreen and rosin don't actually increase spin rate.
Yeah.
So those are there so that essentially you can get a good grip on the ball. And especially as it gets hotter and people start to sweat, it's hard to hold on to the ball. And a lot of these guys, they're saying, look, I'm afraid I don't want to hit somebody in the head.
Yeah.
And they're right. And these aren't necessarily things that give you an advantage. Like, yeah, we don't want Garrett Cole using spider tack.
Yeah.
But the enforcement of this has just been ridiculous, and it was going okay, but it took what, one day before somebody abused it. And we've got Joe Girardi out there calling for this excessive third check on Max Scherzer, basically because he's mad because Scherzer is pitching well. So there's got to be some kind of ironing out of this. I don't love these sort of knee jerk. We're implementing a completely new rule mid-season. Baseball does not have a good track record with this kind of stuff.
No, it seems like they're the product is surviving in spite of itself. You know, I'm still a big baseball fan, but they seem like all the rules, the people wanted a couple of rule changes, but I think the ones that they've implemented, people are kind of like, the only one I'd probably say that I actually do like, and I'm probably in the minority on this one, is the extra innings putting a player on second base. I know the pitchers hate that and everything, but to me, I don't know. I just feel like it's a little bit more exciting. I know you said that you don't mind the 18 inning games and everything, and I don't either. I just feel like it's a little bit more exciting, especially with teams score and trade runs and everything like that. But a lot of the rules that they've implemented have pissed people off, made people mad, have like kind of made the fan bases mad. A lot of the pitchers are mad. It seems like everybody in Major League Baseball, players, hitters and pitchers, are pissed off at Rob Manfred right now because they don't feel like he's really listening to them.
Yeah, we had Andrew Kerrigan on, former Major League Baseball player. Yeah. He had some very unpleasant things to say about the all current the rules commissioner. What are your thoughts on these rule changes as a whole?
I'm not a fan of most of them. I think they are misguided.
Yeah.
Baseball, and this is, no matter how you feel about the other things that he does, Trevor Bauer has actually made a lot of really good points about the mismarketing of baseball, and that the biggest problem they have isn't that there's anything wrong with baseball as it is or as it was prior to rule changes. The problem was that it is poorly marketed. So it's not baseball that's the problem. Putting a ghost runner on second, speeding up the game. I mean, I'm okay with the three batter minimum. I think anything that can avoid another Craig Council, NLCS 2 years ago situation is most welcome. In my book, that was awful and everybody hated it. But otherwise, I really hate most of what they've done. And it's because they're not looking at this right. I mean, we're still doing all these things, trying to quash personality, and they've gotten a little bit better, but it's still a big debate every time somebody bat flips or wears custom cleats or shares an opinion. And that's where I think baseball is making a mistake, is we don't need to change baseball. We need to change the way that we market baseball.
I couldn't agree more, because there's a lot of really great players, young players from all over, from all walks of life, that they're just, you just don't hear about them, man. You don't hear about any type of marketing. You don't hear about any outspoken players, or like Samantha said, them speaking their mind. They kind of squash that right away, and they're squashing their product, in my opinion, because there's so many marketable guys in this league right now, man. Baseball is actually, in my opinion, I mean, I've been an Indians fan, a baseball fan my whole life, but right now it's probably one of the most exciting times in baseball, in my opinion. I feel like there's incredible parity right now in baseball. You have teams like the Indians who are expected to be kind of middle of the pack AL Central team, and here he is. We're competing for the division and everything. It's extremely exciting, man, and I think this is a great time for baseball. But like Samantha said, it's being marketed like shit. It's just terribly marketed.
Yeah, and I think the commissioner deserves some heat, rightfully so. But I also think baseball's always had this problem of tweaking things that didn't need to be tweaked. Yeah. It's been a sport that's been around for a while. It's obviously been successful over the years.
Yeah.
I remember the humidor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
With Coors Field and all that, and I mean, whoever is in charge, they just always seem to, like, they can't sit on their hands. They need to tweak something, and it's annoying as a fan.
I think at least 10 of the Major League Baseball teams are using humidors. They're like totally legal and everything now.
I didn't know that. Wow.
It's crazy. So I want to ask you just before we let you go. So, like, what do you see happening for the Indians this year? If they can stay healthy, I know that's a big if. And you said earlier in our interview that you're worried about maybe overextending some of these guys, and that the pitching situation right now isn't sustainable for the long haul. But if they can get some of these guys healthy, presumably, and keep them healthy, where do you see the Indians finishing the year?
I'm not sure that I'm entirely objecting about this. I'm an Indians fan first.
Same,
they're my true love when it comes to sports teams. So I always tend to take a, I guess, a sunnier perspective on the Indians and much better at being objective about the Browns.
Yeah, yeah.
But look, I think the Indians have always been a second half team, or at least in modern, let's say the last 20 years, the Indians have very much been a second half team. So if this had to happen, all this sort of bad luck kind of stuff, it's better that it happens in the first half because they're a stronger team in the back half of the season. It's a little bit difficult to say because in the last few years, Minnesota has been their tightest competition. And Minnesota was a team that worked the opposite of the Indians. They were just completely come apart in the second half after going on a tear in the first half. So you kind of knew where you stood. We don't really know what Chicago is going to be like. They look like they're starting to struggle, but we got a long way to go in this baseball season. So I think if the Indians can get healthy, essentially, if everybody comes back on the schedule that they're supposed to. So we see Zach Plesac at the beginning of July. We see Shane Bieber shortly after that. Fernando Reyes, Roberto Perez come back as well to help the offense. Also, I think we want to not discount Roberto Perez and how much he does for that pitching staff as a catcher. That will help as well. Maybe they would be willing to make a small move at the trade deadline, if possible, to bring in somebody who's kind of an innings eater, if that's the difference maker. But so far, I'm going to go ahead and continue to believe in the Indians. Say I think they're a playoff team until they show me that they're not. And they've done such a good job of hanging in despite all this adversity that, hey, you know, go drive. I got to believe.
Yeah, I do too. And I put my trust in Tito. I think he's a great manager. One of the most underrated managers in MLB history. I've heard some people say that they don't think he's a Hall of Famer, which I think is ludicrous, man. Ooh. He's a two-time world champion.
Dude, for what he did in Boston alone,
I've had an argument with about three or four different people about this, and they said no. And I'm like, dude, what the hell are you smoking?
Insane.
That's ridiculous. Yeah, he's been a godsend for the Indians, because I feel like as long as we have him, we're always going to be a team that's at least competing for the wild card position. And he just makes it at least exciting, man, because that's the one thing you want as a sports fan. You don't want to be the Pittsburgh Pirates where 60 games in the season, you've already lost 40 games, and your season's over. It's nice to be the Indians and have a guy that you know you can trust. And no matter what happens, it seems like he's got an answer for it. And I know that a lot of that goes to player development, the organization as a whole. But I think that all starts with Tito Francona, and it's been great having him as our manager.
Yeah, for sure. Samantha, we're down here in Austin, Texas. We're a little bit further away from Cleveland, a lot further away from Cleveland. If you had a genie in a bottle and you could get one championship for either the Indians or the Browns, for the city, I'm not saying what would you like to see more. What do you think the city needs more of those two?
Who do you give it to? This is easy.
Oh, yeah. I'm glad you specified me versus city, because for me, it would be the Indians, but for the city, it is undoubtedly the Browns. Yeah. No question.
Yeah.
And why is that? For people that aren't around Browns, Cleveland sports, I mean, what would
it's
that mean?
Town.
Yeah, it's just a Browns town, man. No matter, my whole life, you know, they've been... My dad was a sports writer as well, and he covered some of those early 90s Browns teams. And, you know, we had like a little heyday there with Bernie and everything like that. But for the most part, I'm 37. For the majority of my life, we've been a shit organization. And the fan base has still been incredibly, incredibly excited about the team every single year. They think, like, this is going to be the year. It's crazy. You go up to Cleveland, and it is overwhelmingly a Browns town. But I would say the Indians are in second there. But yeah, if the Browns won the Super Bowl, that city wouldn't sleep for 3 weeks or some shit, dude. The mayor would be drunk down on 4th Street or some shit, man. It'd be crazy. You know what I'm saying? But I know, Samantha, you're not a huge Cavs person and everything like that, but they do have the third pick in the draft this year. I'm hoping personally that I don't want to see them trade that unless it was like for someone that's not going to want to stay in Cleveland anyways. But I would like to see them to continue to build through the draft and everything like that. I hope that they're not talking about trading Colin Sexton, but I hope that with this draft pick, they say it's a top five heavy draft. The top five players are could be perennial all-stars. Hopefully they don't screw this up and pick another Anthony Bennett type player or something like that. But do you have any expectations whatsoever for the Cavs?
Not much. Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. Like, please don't trade the pick. This is absolutely not the point.
Yeah.
The rebuilding cycle where you want to do that. So I hope they hang on to that pick. I think it's pretty easy to make a good choice this year.
Yeah.
And some drafts are a little bit different, but if you have a top five pick this year, I think it's pretty easy to get it right. I hate saying things like that when I'm talking about a Cleveland.
Yeah. Right.
So, but it's screwing up things that anyone should be able to get right. So I'm going to knock on wood now that I said this. But hang on to the pick. no reason you can't get somebody who's going to be a huge, huge boost to your roster almost immediately.
Yeah, I feel like we still need a number one scorer. I think Colin Sexton could be a great number two guy on a championship level team, but we still need that all-star, that superstar type player. And hopefully we can either, you know, depending on either Mobley or Jalen Green. I watched a little bit of tape on Jalen Green the other day. Dude is an explosive athlete. He seems like a more level-headed Kevin Porter Jr., which is someone that definitely stings. You bring his name up as a Cavs fan because everyone knew he was going to be a star. And I think he will. He had a 50-point game at the end of the season this year for Houston. So we had to trade him because, you know, things didn't work out with the front office and everything like that. It seems like we can't ever have nice things as a Cavs fan, you know, unless it's like LeBron associated. But I'm hoping they hold on to the pick. I'm hoping that Jalen Green or Evan Mobley is that all-star, superstar-type player that we need right now, because we have a number two, and I think we could have potentially a number three guy, and Darius Garland and Jared Allen. They have a good mix of young guys, but I think we have to stay young, man, because that's how a team like Cleveland and a market like Cleveland is going to build a team, and a championship-caliber team is through the draft and bringing guys in that way. But no one's going to stay there long term, you know what I'm saying? So
for sure. Yeah. Most important question of the day, Samantha: do you drink whiskey and bourbon?
No, not so much. I'm mostly a like cheap beer, expensive champagne person.
Oh, there you go.
Not a lot of liquor. I mostly stick to vodka and margaritas when I'm drinking liquor. So
all right.
Whiskey recommendations for you.
Fair enough. We're going to send you a bottle from Still Austin. It's our favorite distillery here in Austin. They're one of our sponsors. They take good care of us. I'm going to see if maybe we can get maybe a bottle of gin or something else up there. They make a few other things.
You can barter it for some Natty Light or something like that if you want.
if it's something good, I'll try it.
It goes down smooth. We have heard from people that aren't big whiskey drinkers that even
I'm not a whiskey person, man. And me and my friend went through a bottle of that in a Saturday one time doing some watching some sports and stuff at my house. So
it goes down quick. So Chad will reach out to you, ask for your address, and then we'll get that to you in the mail. It's just a thank you for coming on the show, because we really appreciate your time today.
This is a great interview, Samantha. Everybody make sure you go and check her out on Twitter. It's at Samantha Bunton, SamanthaBunten, and check out Three and Out podcast, and you can find them on Twitter @3Out Pod. Check them out. Awesome show. I was watching some of it, listened to some of it yesterday and today, and they speak their mind, man. They're not afraid. They don't hold back whatsoever.
That's what we like.
Love that. Samantha, thanks for coming on the show. Hopefully we can have you on again later in the season once the Browns are off to like a 7 or 8-1 start or something like that. We're talking about playoffs and everything. That'll be great.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for having me, guys.
Thanks, Samantha. We really appreciate it. All right, that was a great interview with Samantha Bunton, and also with Pamela Maldonado from Odd Shark. It was super informative. We got all kinds of great information representing the ladies today, coming in and talking some great sports action coming up here soon.
Yeah, man, all sorts of good insight from both of them. I mean, I can't get over Pam's last week of the season betting suggestion.
Yeah.
She was almost a little bit regretting telling us that, because she's like, the books are going to catch on to this they're going to get ahead of it. They're going to kind of close that loophole.
Yeah.
And so that is one thing. Week 18 now, we're going to call it next year, that I'm looking forward to. And then Samantha with just tons of knowledge and insight.
She knows her stuff, man.
Yeah, absolutely,
she knows those teams frontwards and backwards.
Yeah, into the Indians and the Browns. And so I think probably our Cleveland fans are gonna love this episode a little bit more. But I think for everybody out there, tons of great insight to learn about those teams.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the Browns are a very enigmatic team. They're definitely, you know, a hot topic right now, considered one of the up-and-coming teams in the AFC. And so it's going to be interesting to see what we can do this year. We've got a second-year head coach. He's going to have a little bit more time with the players this year. Of course, so with COVID last year, we didn't have as much time to implement this new system. It was a terrible year to have a new coach. Unfortunately, the Browns still did pretty well, all things considered. Made the playoffs, beat the hell out of the Steelers in the first round, gave himself a chance against Kansas City there. Should have won that game, in my opinion. But it's going to be interesting to see what we can do this year, man, because we added a lot of people to that defense that we needed. The offense is going to have a second year under their belt. And then we brought in some speed with Anthony Schwartz in the draft, who's one of the top, one of the fastest guys in the draft. And that was like, I was calling for it all year, man. We got a lot of possession receivers. We got a lot of guys that can give you 12 to 16 yards. We needed someone that could take the top off the defense. They can run some fly routes and just run past safeties and everything. And so I feel like hopefully we finally got that. It's going to add another element to the offense already with Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, probably the best running back duo in the NFL, in my opinion. Of course, I'm biased. And I look for Baker Mayfield to take another step forward. You know, I mean, he's had an amazing career thus far. Maybe didn't put up as many touchdown passes last year as some people would have liked, but he was way more efficient, way more decisive with the ball. He wasn't throwing as many interceptions. Way more solid, you know, with the football, making good decisions. And so it's going to be really interesting to see what he does coming back next year, second year in the offense with OBJ coming back, hopefully staying healthy, Jarvis Landry, one of my favorite players in the NFL, and then adding that that another element to the offense as well on the outside. So
yeah, I can tell you're ready for football season.
Oh man, I can't wait. Too, man. Oh, I'm ready, man. I'm ready. I can't wait to spend $550 on a NFL Sunday ticket. It's going to be great.
Absolutely, man.
Take about what is $1,000? Okay, I'll mortgage the house. Who gives a shit? Let's do it.
And how about Pamela with a couple long shot options? You know, a 14-1 option for us for Wimbledon coming up.
And it was
so
great.
That was exciting
because neither of us know too much about tennis and everything like that. And she came in here, she's naming people I didn't even know existed and shit. I'm like, hell yeah.
She rocked it.
Yeah, it's some great information. So you want to take that information, put some money down on Wimbledon. It's a great time, man. Tennis is fun as hell to watch. I love watching women's tennis too, man. You get some of the Serena Williams action in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good stuff, man. So make sure, give both of our guests a follow on Twitter today. Those ladies really, really know their stuff. And it was great to talk to him because I feel like we all got a little bit more information. We gave our viewers and listeners a little bit more information and hopefully letting them get to know the Browns a little bit better. There's a lot of teams that we want to preview before the season starts. Teams that we don't necessarily know too much about, but we're going to have athletes, players, writers from these organizations that can give all of our listeners a better understanding of all the teams out there. So we're not just like focused on one specific team, although we have been very 49ers centric. You know what I'm saying? That's just kind of been the way things have gone. But we're going to be previewing all kinds of different teams, letting you get to know them. Again, some insider information from people that have been covering them for years and everything like that. That's what I'm looking forward to, learning about teams that I don't know too much about already.
It's a good point. So if this is, you know, your first show that you're watching, make sure you subscribe to us. Yep. Whether you're listening on iTunes, whether you're watching on YouTube, give us a thumbs up. Follow us on social media because we do have some very exciting interviews coming up. Things that we can't really say right now because they're, you know, 99% confirmed.
Yeah.
And so please do follow, like, etc. Tell your friends about the show because we got some exciting interviews.
Yeah, we got some big interviews coming up. Like I said, we can't name the guys just yet, but it's going to be some big names, some names.
And we're not bullshitting
knows.
You either. No. It's not like we don't have the names and we're just saying we do. We really got some big names coming up.
Yeah,
it's not
like Muggsy Bogues or something. Although I would love to interview Muggsy Bogues.
Oh, hell yeah.
Muggsy Bogues.
Oh, absolutely. Dude, let's add him to the list.
Hit me up. I'm trying to get a hold of him, man. He's not answering. He doesn't answer emails, apparently. Muggsy don't fuck with emails, I guess. But yeah, we got some big time interviews and we're really excited about it. This is just the tip of the iceberg, man. We're just getting warmed up. And so we're really excited. And we're also really excited about our sponsor, Oddshark. Oddshark is your source for latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. Looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game? Oddshark has that too. And it's free. In-depth, expert analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. Whether you want to check out tonight's football odds, this week's hockey or basketball trends, or anything in between, head on over to Oddshark and start thinking like a shark today. They are a go-to resource. You got to check them out if you're going to be placing any bets. I've been telling all my friends, man, got a lot of friends that are sports bettors, and I'm like, dude, you got to go to Oddshark because you're probably not getting the best number if you're just going through one site. Exactly. A lot of them are going through just one specific site. Where do you bet from? Oh, I go through Bovada, or I go through, you know, this or that. So, man, you got to check out all the numbers because it differs across all these different websites, and you could be losing so much money. I had a friend that hit a parlay, man. If he would have put it on, would have plugged it into Oddshark and looked at those numbers, he would have got a much better deal, made a little bit more money. Yeah. As Pam said, you can go to Hawaii, maybe get a couple spritzers, you know what I'm saying? Get a 12-pack of some Micheladas or some shit. Who knows, man? You'd be balling.
Absolutely.
Go to Oddshark and make sure you make them your destination before you make a pick. You want to research it. You don't want to just be throwing money. Oh, I see one number and that's it. No, man, check out some other numbers and it's all right there in front of you. It's not like you got to search for this shit. You don't got to be like, oh, let's go to this. Well, what about Bovada for this line? And it's all right there. So it tells you everything. So you're going to be guaranteed to get the best number you possibly can.
Absolutely. Great point, Chad. Great show today.
Yeah, this was awesome, man.
Yeah, everybody enjoy Wimbledon.
Super informative. Yeah,
for sure. Put those bets in on Wimbledon and enjoy the show.
Yeah, and the playoffs. We got the NBA playoffs. Is an awesome time right now. Wide open. Four teams. All four of them could win it. Finally got some parity in the NBA, which is super exciting. Mm. I read the other day, Mark Cuban tweeted this, that the NBA numbers for viewership is up exponentially. It's the highest it's been since they started tracking
it
in 2002.
You know, I wonder if college football could learn something from this.
That's
funny. You have a little parody, and then all of a sudden more people watch and care.
Yep.
What a novel concept.
That's exactly right, dude. And that's funny because I was having this conversation with my little brother. I was talking to him on the phone, and we were saying the exact same thing, that college football could benefit from this, because I've never been less excited about a college football season, I don't think, in 30 some years.
And every year you get less and less excited.
Yeah, because we know, let me guess. It's going to be Alabama and Clemson, Oklahoma and Ohio State in the Final Four. We get it. You know what I'm saying? And until they do something to make the playing field level, in my opinion, this is like a little conspiracy that I have, man, is that I feel like a lot of those big time schools have been cheating. They've been playing players. And then some of the teams that aren't paying players, I would put Michigan in that. I mean, of course. I wish they were paying players. Of course, I'm going to say that, though. You know what I'm saying? I don't think Michigan is doing that. But I feel like if you level the playing field, then you don't have 35 first-round picks signing with Alabama every year. Let's divvy that out a little bit, get a little bit more parity. But they're not going after these big-time programs, man. They're not going after Nick Saban. They're not going after Coach K. They're not going after these guys. They're letting them kind of skate on by. And that's why you see, like, this overwhelming lack of parity in college football this year.
Always love a good sports conspiracy, man.
Yeah,
that's
dude.
A good one. I like that one.
I think that's definitely true, because we're seeing the same teams every year. And Clemson was not a traditional powerhouse. Now, all of a sudden, you know what I mean? They're one of the top teams every single year, getting top athletes. They're Alabama's always number one or two in recruiting, you know? And so if you get the best players, you're going to be a better team.
Would you watch a movie if someone told you the entire script?
Yeah, exactly, dude. Yeah, we already know there's probably about an 85% chance, I would say, 80 to 90% chance, somewhere around there, that Alabama's going to be in the Final Four.
And the odds reflect that. This isn't just your opinion. This is practically everybody's opinion.
And it is every single year.
Vegas, yeah.
Alabama signed another top recruiting class. Clemson's up there at the top as well. And all these teams, you know, these SEC schools are getting all this talent, and that's why they're winning every single year. And so until there's some parity, college football, take a little note from the NBA playoffs, man. And the NBA playoffs, this has been the most exciting it's been in I don't know how long, man. You never know who's going to win night to night. And, you know, Phoenix had a 2-0 lead. You never know what's going to happen with their LA Clippers come back from two separate 2-0 leads already this playoffs.
Yeah.
So it's possible again. It's great to have parity. It's great to have hope and hope for fans and everything like that, because it's not just one or two teams when we know who's going to be in the finals, or we know two of the three teams they're going to be in the Final Four, you know. So it's exciting, man. It's a great time.
No doubt.
For sports in general.
No doubt, man. Great show today, Chad.
Great show. Awesome guests. Awesome information. Please give us a follow on all social media platforms. We are at DMP City Sports. That's probably on your screen right about now. Please leave us a review. Please tell your friends. Please rate it. All that stuff. You know what I'm saying? That helps with the algorithms. It helps helps our show grow and everything like that. So we appreciate you guys tuning in, listening, watching. Please tell your friends about the show. We'll see you guys next week with another awesome guest. For Tony, I am Chad. We'll see you guys next week. Peace.
Enjoy Wimbledon.
Thanks for listening. You can find more episodes and all other Hot Pie Media originals baked fresh daily at our home on the web at hotpiemedia.com, the Hot Pie Media YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.